listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.
Hello and welcome to Football in Europe. I'm Rob Daly. This is your weekly European football podcast. Alongside me is Chris Parrott, smiling.
Yeah, it was something about the intro. It seemed very slow between words.
It was a long weekend. Chris, what are we talking about this week?
We have got a special guest, Rob, Guillaume Balague, on all things La Liga. Man who knows everything, and there is plenty going on and off the pitch in Spain. We're also going to have a chat about Paris Saint-Germain against Monaco, about a potential second East German side being in the Bundesliga next season. And I've got a Ruben and you haven't.
I've forgot my Ruben. I've got a list of all the major transfers that have gone through in the last week, so maybe that can take the place of my Ruben.
Okay, that's good.
What Ruben is yours though, Chris?
Mine is to do with Spain and Luis Suarez, as we'll hear. Last Garcia equaliser at the weekend against Real Betis. Barcelona have never lost when he scored. 67 games. They've won 63 of them.
Oh, so that draw at the weekend was one of the only four draws. That is extraordinary, isn't it?
Yeah, that does seem... When I saw that, you know, there's so many stats now, but I thought, wow. I mean, Barcelona don't lose very often. So maybe the real stat there is that they've won 63 of 67 games he scored.
Luis Suarez with that later equaliser against Real Betis. Plenty of drama and talking points in that game, including the goal that wasn't given that was clearly over the line. We'll be discussing the return of Revista to Sky Sports as well with Guillaume Balague, the Spanish football show in the UK. Chris, let's have some. Let's talk about some of the transfers then that have gone through. Tell me if these are any of these do excite you. So Demba Ba apparently is going back to Besiktas. He's going on loan from the Chinese Super League. Davy Proper, the last we heard, PSV had rejected an offer from Zenit for the midfielder. Dimitri Payet's moved to Marseille along with Evra, more on that later, and more on Bojan joining Mainz on loan. Niang going to Watford from AC Milan, with De La Feu going the other way in essence from Everton. Alexander Isak, a player we talked about last week, that deal went through with a few days ago, but he has joined Borussia Dortmund, not Real Madrid.
Yeah.
Ricardo Zampanera is on loan at Fiorentina from Empoli. Clement Grenier, odd transfer this, joins Roma on loan from Lyon. Alan Halilovic, that loan move from Barcelona to Hamburg really didn't work out. He's gone to Las Palmas. And I think Hesse's gone there too. I think that's gone through.
Yes, surprise, surprise, he chose the Canary Islands over Teesside.
Nevin Subotic has joined Cologne on loan till the end of the season, I think it is. Adrian Ramos has left Dortmund to go to Granada on loan. Gonzalo Guedes, a player we'll talk about, and a second sign for Paris Saint-Germain from Benfica. Evra to Marseille. Oscar Hiljemark joins Genoa from sinking Palermo. And Daniel Caligiuri, this was an interesting one, from Wolfsburg to Schalke for €2 million. Both Schalke and Wolfsburg had disastrous weekends. Terence Boyd, the United States international, has joined Darmstadt for €500,000. Do any of those really get you excited? They're very January.
They are.
Aren't they, transfers?
I mean, in some ways, I don't know, Julian Draxler maybe is still the biggest. Dimitri Payet. Fascinated to see how he does, actually, when he goes to Marseille. Mm. Could go one of two ways, I think. I've seen plenty of things. There's an article written that basically Dimitri Payet, West Ham fans, he was great last season, but they've not seen much of him this campaign. And then I looked at the stats, and that's true. He's been much worse this campaign, but he's still created about 90% of their chances. And, you know, maybe he's looking around, he's thinking, come on, no one's... Yeah.
What do you make to the manner of the whole Payet exit? Marseille very happy to have him back.
Yeah, I mean, if ever a move has been forced upon a club, I think it's that. And then you have that thing, well, do you just cut your losses and, you know, if a player is that desperate to leave? It's a shame. Shame for the Premier League, shame for West Ham, because he was brilliant to watch, you know, and some of those free kicks, but...
I think he was the best player of the group stage at the Euros as
well. Yeah, absolutely. And then I think, I don't know, burnout's often used. He was. Because remember, when he left Marseille to go to West Ham, he was nowhere near the France squad. And I think that's why the West Ham, as a club and the fans, feel a little bit cheated, because they gave Dimitri Payet quite a lot. Yes, it was his performances, but they gave him the platform. Mm. Bilic backed him. He gets in the France squad off the back of his season at West Ham. Then he's brilliant. And all of a sudden now, 6 months on, having signed a big new deal, he says he wants out. But, I mean, from Marseille, if they can if he still got it, you know, you see some players who go from, you know, can he consistently do it at Marseille? If so, they've signed themselves one of the best attacking midfielders in Europe.
Yeah, certainly. I was reading an interesting thing in I think it was in Kicker, they were breaking down that Payet's done this three times now.
Yeah.
Essentially, almost gone on strike.
Exactly.
Type thing, which says a lot. Because when he signed for West Ham, my West Ham supporting mate was saying, how did we get this guy, like 2 months in?
Yeah, yeah.
And I was like, that's
the reason
that's
why.
I mean,
he's very Marseille in many ways, isn't he?
You can see. Yeah.
He fits in perfectly there. And, you know, but it will be interesting to see how long, you know, where would he be able to go after? Maybe he considers now that's where he wants to go.
Okay, well,
finish his career, win something with Marseille.
Yeah, exactly. And this brings us, actually, let's talk about Marseille before Paris Saint-Germain Monaco then, Chris, because Charlie's tweeted in to say, with Marseille's new additions, could they make a European place this season? You've been tweeting us at FIE Podcast, and we're going to get to all your tweets throughout the show. Chris, Marseille in Europe, they've signed Evra too.
Yeah, well, I mean, they can do. They're 4 points behind Lyon in fourth at the moment. Two big things happened this season. I think the most important was the new owner, Frank McCourt, former LA Dodgers, taking over from Margarita Louis Dreyfus, who was pretty unpopular by the end of her tenure there. Marseille were lurching from one crisis to another.
Yeah, I feel like we have to get someone on from American sports to talk about Frank McCourt, because some people have some very unsavoury views of the way he's managed sports franchises in the US.
So. I know, I mean, as things stand, he's coming in and he's clearly, you know, there is some money for Marseille to spend. So they can certainly be in Europe. I think they've got a very stable coach as well, a guy who, you know, I get the picture, if there is sort of things going on behind the scenes, he still sets his teams up very well. They lost twice recently, one at the weekend, thrashed Montpellier, but clearly a work in progress. I think fairly heavy defeats to Lyon and Monaco in the last couple of weeks. So it will be a push to get in the European places. But Patrice Evra is an interesting one, isn't it? Mid-season, didn't play much in Serie A, but played, I think, an ever-present in their Champions League. Talking about winning that competition and then moving not very far from Turin to Marseille. But it's an interesting acquisition. He is 35.
Do you think he knew that his time maybe at Juventus was coming to an end?
I read an interview with him earlier on in the season before the Lyon game. And it was, sometimes you can read between the lines. And he praised the Lyon owner and Lyon as a club. At least three or four times, unprompted. And you did just wonder. I mean, I am a cynic, but I did.
No. Players will push an agenda.
They
of their
will,
own,
and reading it, you thought, okay, maybe his time at Juve is coming to an end. He didn't go to Lyon. At the end, he went to Marseille. Experience will be key. I do think for Ligue 1, you know, how many times did we almost laugh at the league last season when PSG were winning it by 30 points? You've got Nice, who have been a breath of fresh air, whether they last the distance. Marseille seem to be on their way back, certainly behind the scenes. And then you've got Monaco, who are definite challengers. So all of a sudden, you do actually have a decent title race. Or Ligue 1 is interesting again.
It certainly is. Marseille with a 5-1 win over Montpellier at the weekend. Bafétimbi Gomis with a hat-trick. Evra played about 70 minutes.
Yeah, oh, one more thing.
In that game.
The Juve statement, I really liked it. They called him Uncle Pat.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, Uncle Paddy Evs joining Marseille. So Marseille get themselves sixth and within 4 points of Lyon in the European places, as you mentioned there, Chris. But we've got to talk about Paris Saint-Germain against Monaco. It is probably the fixture in terms of title races, really, in France these days, even though Nice have been top of the table. What happened? How did this one pan out?
1-1. It was a good game between the, I was going to say nouveau riche, but PSG have always been rich and Monaco have always been rich, so I don't know what you call them.
They're both sort of nouveau, but they've both had their new money.
New money. Nouveau riche. We have a good game. Kevin Trapp made a brilliant save in the first half from Fabinho. Then he had to go off. Edison Cavani scored a penalty, 9 minutes from time, and you thought, okay, Paris Saint-Germain are going to win. And then up popped Bernardo Silva in the 92nd minute. Big equaliser for Monaco. I think to go to the Parc des Princes to get a point to remain top, they'll be much the happier than Unai Emery and PSG. And another moment for Bernardo Silva, who, out of a very, very exciting crop, is maybe just this week nudging in terms of the brightest talent Monaco have. That's a big thing to say, given all that Lehmar and people have done this season.
No, I mean, I think it was in L'Equipe. They did a sort of worked out the value of the whole team of Monaco and gave rough prices. They put 50 million euros on Falcao, which I thought was hilarious, despite the fact he's been great this season. But they put 70 million on Bernardo Silva, made him, they would argue that he was the most valuable player in the team. I remember you certainly saw him at a very young age, didn't you, playing for Portugal at youth level?
Yeah, I mean, it seems a long time ago. It's only 2 years since the 2015 Under-21 Championship. Portugal made the final. They were the best team by a mile, and they lost to Sweden on penalties. Bernardo Silva was the best player. I almost say he was comfortably the best player. Did a piece of him. He's very articulate, intelligent guy. He said he was going to... You know,
you spoke to him in English?
No, it was Portuguese interview with, but he can speak English. Mm. And asked him a question. We asked him the question, what would you be if you weren't a footballer? Which is a standard question to ask. You often get boring answers. And he said, well, I don't know, I might have done economics at high school. And he sort of went, okay, interesting. Okay, yeah. So yeah, he's a guy who's a brilliant footballer, but he's very intelligent as well, and you can see why. I just wonder, I mean, we're almost at the end of January, aren't we? So Monaco do seem to have kept hold of their stars without an enormous amount of speculation.
I don't think you sell the guys now, really.
No, well, no.
I think this is the way the market goes, that you don't lose a player. Like Payet maybe would be one against the rule, but the players that you want to keep, you generally keep at this stage. Drax Wolfsburg wanted to sell.
Yeah, that's true.
And Guedes, that money was probably too good from Paris Saint-Germain.
And you know, if you're Monaco, I'm pleased as well, because it's funny, because Monaco in my head this season have totally transformed from a side that you weren't supposed to like, because they have lots of money and they play in front of nobody.
And they played defensive under Leon Desjardins.
And then all of a sudden they seem to have, now I'm sort of willing them to do well, because they have these young players and they don't necessarily have the guys that they brought for... They did spend quite a lot of money on Bernardo Silva, actually, but, you know, they don't have these guys that they were spending huge amounts on.
Well, James is an example of that. I mean, Mr. Walker Porter, regular tweeter, says, Monaco's results, the highlight of his weekend, 23 more goals, I presume them, Paris Saint-Germain, that is. Yeah, that's right. And he says, Silva, Falcao, great side to watch. They're going to be the millionaire's shopping list in 2017.
They are, but as ever, when you are buying from Monaco, there are certain things, including how much players earn when they're at Monaco due to the taxes, that they're not sometimes as easy to prize away as you might immediately think. But it is, I just think, as come back to the whole PSG Monaco, two traditionally relatively unpopular clubs unless you support them in France. I think now everyone, Monaco are sort of the side that everyone wants just to knock PSG off the perch.
Yeah, and trouble for Manchester City potentially on the horizon in the Champions League. Gonçalo Guedes as well, Chris, signed from Benfica, 20-year-old versatile forward. He got some minutes in the game.
Yeah, he did. Came on late for his debut. I mean, Patrick Kluivert had, publicly, we've mentioned on the podcast, wanted to sign a striker. He's sort of, I don't know if he's back up for Cavani, but they're also speaking about he can play on the right, the left, or the middle of the three behind. Very exciting young Portuguese talent. Scored a fair amount of goals for Benfica. Read a really good quote from Jorge Jesus, who was his former coach, gave him his debut. He said, Guedes is 2 years ahead of his age. You can't value a player solely on what he does with the ball at his feet. We have to look at how he understands the game tactically and physically, which is quite nice. And for how much they signed him, I think, was it 20-odd million? 25?
Yeah, I think a bit more. Yeah, 25 was it, I think.
25. Doesn't look too bad. I mean, West Ham are going to pay 15 for Scott Hogan. And Villa spent 12 million on Ross McCormack.
And Palace spent 14 on Patrick Van Aanholt.
They did, yes. But yeah, I don't know what you think, but you see it with a few players now, and they always say that intelligent, great players can play in a variety of positions, but they're already talking about Guedes playing in one or two positions. Kind of hope he would, at some stage, go there and see, like, I'm going to be a centre-forward, or I'm going to be... Do you remember when Cavani played out on the wing because Ibrahimovic was... And that isn't where he should play.
Yeah, that's different, though, isn't it? We knew he was a striker being crowbarred into that position.
Yeah.
I mean, who would you mean in that sort of frame, that a player who can play a few positions who hasn't nailed down one?
Well, I mean, possibly someone like Guedes, Anthony Martial, I guess.
Yeah.
You know, you're that type of... and it's really hard because there's so many great players at, you know, Paris Saint-Germain or at Manchester United. But sometimes you think, with Guedes, if he goes to Paris Saint-Germain, will he be able to nail down one position? I don't know. Maybe if an ex-pro was here, they say it wouldn't matter. He'll be fine. But sometimes I think if that guy played down the middle for 10 games in a row, I bet it would be better than if Guedes is playing right wing, left wing, centre forward.
Okay, so an interesting result in terms of the title race. Monaco top on 49 points. Nice have 49. Paris Saint-Germain have 46. Monaco host Nice next Saturday afternoon. What a huge game that is. Tell us about Nice. Chris, last week we had Adam Summerton on the show and we talked about the Balotelli accusations from him of racism from sections of the crowd in the Bastia game. They played away at Bastia and then there was footage of those alleged racist incidents broadcast on French TV. Nice got a 3-1 win over Guingamp at the weekend. Balotelli scoring a fine goal to wrap up that win and keep them in title contention. But what sort of happened as a result of that incident at Bastia just over a week ago now?
Well, I think we can say now that it's not alleged racism, that it did happen, because Bastia have banned one supporter for life. Basically, they launched an appeal for supporters to come forward if they had done it, which is a slightly interesting thing. I would have thought in the modern age of CCTV that they would know exactly who it was and that it was more than one person. And one supporter did come forward, a 40-year-old, and he's now been banned from the stadium for life. Alassane Player also came out and said that he had heard it. And the only, you know, in a way you think, OK, Bastia have taken a strong stance, but the guy had to come forward, and also it wasn't just one person. And you hope that the retribution does go a little further. Because
I'm sure this won't be the end of it. I mean, if it's, you know, police will be...
You'd hope so.
Going through all that
because
stuff,
otherwise, you know, one guy being banned from a stadium is, of course, he should be. But it wasn't just him. And I think, Balotelli, it's a horrible thing to go through. But coming forward like he did, you have to have a lot of respect. Mm. Social media has many, many things, but actually it was definitely a great forum for him to come out on Instagram, I think, say what happened and make it news and hopefully ensure it doesn't happen again.
We'll be reading more of your tweets out very shortly. It's at FIE Podcast if you want to get in touch with us. Also, we do have an email address that we don't really read out too much, but it is on our website. It's show@footballineurope.co.uk. And we've got an email here, Chris.
We've got an email. When was the last time we checked the email?
I opened the email. It's from Charlie Craven. Dear Rob and Chris, my name is Charlie Craven. I'm a British expat who's been living in Bucharest for nearly 2 years now, and I'm a listener to your podcast. On this week's show, so I think it was episode 17, he said, I overheard you talking about the club formerly known as Steaua Bucharest.
We were rambling at that stage.
Yeah, we didn't know what was going on, so he's basically informing us.
Oh, brilliant.
He says, their fortunes have demised since Gigi Becali took over. You're right when you said that FCSB have been told by the courts to change their name, and the supporters and a few Steaua legends have, with the Romanian army, formed a team that will play next season in the fourth or fifth tier. Mm. If you'd like to have a chat on the show about the subject, then please feel free to reply and let me know. I'm a big fan of the show. Keep up the good work. Regards, Charlie Craven. Well, Charlie, we invite you formally, Charlie.
Yes.
Onto the podcast if you want to come next week or the week after.
Fascinating. That does.
Basically, the listeners are doing our job. And I think it was Alexandru who tweeted
that's
us the whole explanation
hope,
of it. I know, we don't have to.
That's really interesting, though.
Yeah. So they're doing the sort of, Wimbledon thing.
Yeah.
It sounds like. Okay, so Charlie, please come on and inform us all. That'd be very nice indeed. Chris, let's do a very quick one on Belgium before we hear from Guillaume Balaguer. What happened in Belgium at the weekend?
Oh, it was the Classico. It was really, in a way, really enjoyable as a man who has had to suffer an awful lot of fairly turgid matches.
So what's the Belgian Classico?
Club Bruges would argue that, well, they are one of the three sides, but this was Standard against Anderlecht. Mm-hmm. Finished 0-0. Standard finished with nine men, which is why it was vaguely entertaining. Filip Mladenovic was sent off after 2 minutes, which was impressive. And they had a couple of injured players, particularly one guy. So they'd made all their subs, so they effectively finished with about eight men. And we had Sonia Nikcevic on a few weeks ago. This isn't me saying it, and she's allowed to say it. She tweeted, Serbs, can't take them anywhere.
Well, Filip Mladenovic, he's an interesting player. I saw him play at Cologne and he looked really good. But they have Jonas Hector, so we never got any game time at left back, and they've got good left wingers as well, so you never any game time.
We didn't get much game time in the Classico. How you can't get sent off after 120 seconds.
We're going to talk about a very early red card in a moment with Guillaume Balaguer. A reminder, in La Liga at the weekend, Barcelona and Sevilla both dropped points. Atletico did too, but Real Madrid won, so they're in a great position. Earlier, I caught up with Guillaume Balaguer, a Sky Sports presenter, talking about the return of Revista. We talk about the Spanish title race, and we talk about Bojan and De La Feu. Very interesting. Two players who really haven't kicked on and become the legends that many thought they would.
This is Football in Europe, La Liga latest.
Okay, joining us now is Sky Sports presenter Guillaume Balaguer. Guillaume, thank you very much for joining us on the podcast.
Hello, Rob.
Revista's back. Spanish football fans in the UK are absolutely delighted, and I presume you are too.
I am. I'm happy. And in a way, it never went away. But we are living that this kind of transition where television is changing. Revista became digital, and it became what we call the Revista Bite Size. So little clips that went onto the webpage and on demand. And the fact is, though, this is what the bosses will tell me anyway, the audience that Revista had at the end as a television show, it's much smaller than the hits that we get with the Revista Bite Size clips. But I felt that we still needed to put it all together and to make it as close as possible, considering that times have moved on, to what we used to have. And to be honest, the reception of bringing it back into Sky Sports 5 on Tuesdays has been amazing.
Yeah, it seems very much an extension of what you did with the Bite Size show and the addition I saw last week. You, for example, you did something like break down the actual playing style of Antoine Griezmann. Is there going to be this idea to educate UK viewers about the talents of players who have been linked with the Premier League and who are just lighting up La Liga?
Well, you know, one of the good things or the tricks of Revista was that it more or less had a shape, but we could just, using that shape, we could use it for whatever. In the past, we had a whole show dedicated to David Beckham when he gave us the first interview once he went to Spain and spent an hour eating ham and drinking wine with him. that was Revista as well. Maybe you're too young to remember, but there are occasions when we brought either chairmen, like the chairman of Valencia or the owner of Malaga, people that have made the show completely different. And the plan is exactly the same. Yes, it will be the opportunity to obviously hear from Graham Hunter and a more tactical detail with Sarah Gibson. But there will be a touchscreen feature, which I've been doing from the beginning of the season. Yeah. And it will be just sometimes about players, sometimes about teams. For instance, I'm on my way to do one on halfway through the season, an analysis, a stat analysis of what has been more important this halfway of the season. So, you know, we've got half an hour to do whatever we want with the show, really.
Do you like presenting, Guillaume, actually being the guy leading the show?
Yes, it's a different layer, I suppose, and one almost like logical, considering that I had the idea of this concept about 20 years ago, something like that. It originally was 2 hours, a two-hour highlight show with 15-minute edits of games. Can you imagine that? With David Bobbin presenting, this was when I first started in October 97. But I wanted to reproduce the some of the radio shows that there are in Spain where there's a lot of debate, but good debate, not just shouting at each other, mixed with interviews, mixed with goals, etc. And at the end, it became our baby. All the producers felt it was, you know, it was a show that we put so many hours into it for just 1 hour show. But we loved it. We will have an editorial meeting with Graham, with Scott, with whoever was the guest at the time, and we will be talking for 2 hours, debating what's going to go on the show. Add that, the time from editing, time from producing, a lot of work went into it, and it became what it was at the end. So I was there, like, with Scott being the last presenter of Revista, I was like the pundit. I don't know how to call my position. But in this new format, it was almost logical that I moved into presenting it. So we still have the baby. We still have to want to look after it because, as I said, now that it's back on, people seem to still remember it and love it.
I presume one of the things you're going to be talking about this week on the show is that the goal line incident in the Barcelona game where a goal wasn't given. against Real Betis, which was clearly over the line. And what is your view on the Spanish Football Federation's view on goal line technology and what La Liga should be doing?
Well, quite clearly, technology for that particular incident have to be introduced. I won't tell you the whole details of it, but of course, yeah, we're going to talk about that. And I will tell you as well in Revista why La Liga has not introduced it yet. And it's got to do with politics, it's got to do with money, and it's got to do with friends of the president of La Liga. All very unsavory, really. But it will be tested next season, and it will be in La Liga, no doubt, at some point. But as always, we're always late for these kind of things.
I mean, it was a damaging day, probably for Barcelona in the title race. Great day for Real Madrid after their victory as well. You don't want to be in a situation where you say Real Madrid can't be caught, but they're in a good situation after Sevilla dropped points as well, Guillaume.
Yeah, Sevilla and Barcelona had an opportunity to keep pushing Real Madrid. A Real Madrid that perhaps is not at his best, as we saw, especially in the first half. Real Sociedad were brilliant, but didn't create enough to actually harm Real Madrid. And Real Madrid first shot on goal and a goal. So that's what Real Madrid does. We don't see the best Cristiano, not the best Benzema, with injuries to Modric and Marcelo and Carvajal. They're struggling, but still, they made it as a priority at the beginning of the season. And it's quite clearly that it's their aim to win it for the first time in 4 years. It's a bad record of one league in 8 seasons for Florentino Perez. He wanted to change that, and I think both Zidane and the players are responding.
I saw a lot of Atletico's 0-0 draw at Deportivo Alaves. What do you think is happening with Atletico this season? I know you believe Simeone will stay another season after this one, but what do you think is happening there this campaign?
Yeah, it's to do with humbleness and commitment and attitude, and all of that you start losing when you either tired of the message or tired of the coach or when you feel that you reach the level that you cannot pass. I mean, there's a lot of things that suggest to me that it's the end of an era already. Everybody wants Simeone to stay one more year. The players, the club, he's thinking about that. He renews his contract, reducing the length of his contract to only 2 years. He wants to take the team to the new stadium, but I think it could even be more intelligent to leave at the end of the season, just because he either renews the squad and he needs to do that, and that will harm obviously his relationship to some of the players that has taken him and Atletico Madrid where they are, or if they extend it to one more year, or if he stays on next season, then he's going to have to find new ways of motivating the team, because it feels like he's taking as much as he can from this team.
Just a couple more, Guillaume. One on Espanyol. I'm sure you were delighted to see the manner of their performance, getting that 3-1 win over Sevilla, who have almost taken Atletico's place in the title race this season.
Yes, Espanyol were took advantage of a situation that clearly favoured us, sending off and a penalty that is controversial, to say the least, and that was only after 1 minute of the game against Sevilla. But we played well the second half, and there's so many pleasing things about what Espanyol is doing. Far too often, Quique Sánchez Flores is a little bit too conservative and doesn't go for it, but little by little, we seem to be growing. To have Jurado in the centre midfield instead of Ferreira forward suggests that he wants the team to play better. To have 7 players that have come through the ranks at the end of the game was absolutely wonderful, because that's what the essence of Espanyol is. And even, you know, seeing some of those youngsters reach a level that could take them eventually to the national side. A lot of good things. We should fight for the Europa League, or to get into the Europa League. And let's see if the target of getting to a Champions League contenders in 3 years becomes true. Perhaps a little bit optimistic. But there are things to look forward to.
The final thing I wanted to ask you about 2 players who have just left Premier League clubs in essence, in Bojan and De La Feu. Now, players that you saw, I'm sure, in their very early days at Barcelona. Are you surprised they're now at Mainz and AC Milan, respectively? Are you surprised that those 2 players didn't kick on into be the world stars that many thought they would be?
Well, I never thought Bojan was going to be a world star. I thought that he did very well when he came on at Barcelona, but in fact, this probably was at 17, 18, his best seasons far in his career. Then he was unlucky with injury. But he, you know, is he a goal scorer? Yes. Can he play for a team that fights for titles? You know, yes, he can do that. Never thought he was going to be a world star. They're completely different. De La Feu, I've spoken to many people. I remember the last one been speaking to De La Feu was Fernando Hierro, who was the technical secretary of the federation when De La Feu was coming through the ranks. And he told me that he was the most talented player he's ever seen at 16, wow. 17, 18. But it's not just that. What you need to actually succeed, you need to have the right mentality, you need to work hard, you need to develop, you need a lot of things, which, you know, we take for granted when we see Messi or Cristiano. But when you see the likes of De La Feu with the potential he had and not reaching that potential, then you realize it's not as easy as people may think. So disappointing to see him going from place to place. I think he's not going to reach his potential, which is sad. He should focus and he should listen. He doesn't listen so much, and maybe still, you know, make a good career out of it. But he won't be the player that we expected.
Guillaume, where can people watch Revista now it's back on Sky Sports?
We'll have it on from 9 a.m. on Sky Sports 5 on Tuesday, and then it gets repeated and eventually on demand. So, so yes, I'm on my way to produce it. Spend the whole Monday doing that, and I hope you keep enjoying it.
Guillaume, thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. Have a great show.
Cheers, Rob. Thank you.
Follow the Football in Europe account on Audioboom for the latest podcasts, interviews and special features.
And a big thanks to Guillaume Bellegay for appearing on the show once again. Very strong words on De La Feu and his unfulfilled promise. We'll see if he can deliver at AC Milan, Chris.
Yeah, he's right there, isn't he? I mean, it was fascinating to hear. And you did see flashes of it when he was at Everton. You thought, this guy is great. But like so many, unfortunately, it just shows the players like Ronaldo and Messi, forget which one you like the most. They are great for a reason. They do put in an awful lot of work.
Yes, mentality and everything.
Mentality and everything. Yeah. Yes, they get the riches. We know that. But still, there's a lot of guys who don't quite make it.
Let's read out a couple of your tweets here. More highlights from the weekend. Tom Cheatham has tweeted in to say, Lasse Schöne's free kick and that almost Kasper Dolberg overhead only needed to be 3 inches lower. Ajax getting themselves a 3-0 win over Ajax Den Haag. Patrick Kluivert's son actually started for the first time, Justin Kluivert.
Do you think we should now just call him Justin Kluivert?
No.
Nope.
He has to be.
What's he have to do? Win a European Cup?
He does. He has to do what Paolo Maldini did. Because I'm sure he was Cesare Maldini's son for a long time.
Very, very good point.
More highlights on the weekend. Kate Cooper-Owen, Beckham's Desert Island Discs for sure. I do want to hear that. And Adam Summerton says Hoffenheim's opener at Leipzig. We were going to talk about Portugal, but let's go into that. Adam Summerton, friend of the show, talking about Hoffenheim, Leipzig.
Yeah, it's the great thing about this podcast. We just roll with, you know.
We'll roll with the punches,
just go
boy.
Wherever. Do we ever run in order? No.
Is Chris going to be late again? Yes.
Almost
is he
certainly,
busy?
Yes.
Is he Freddie Lundberg to drop on time? Yes.
The Northern line was terrible.
Oh, okay.
So there we go. Hoffenheim, unbeaten run. Gone. Beaten by Leipzig.
Yeah, they were beaten by Leipzig. They finished the game with 10 men. Sandro Wagner has this temper, just putting this horrible high foot tackle on someone and got himself sent off.
Your face was good there. It's like, oof.
Yeah, I hated it. I mean, on the commentary, they were like, maybe he didn't mean... No, it was awful. It was just terrible. But I mean, Hoffenheim took the lead in brilliant fashion with one of the best team counter-attacking goals you'll see this season from Amiri. And then goals from Timo Werner and Sabitzer won it for Leipzig with the side eventually down to 10 men at that point. I mean, impressive so far from Hoffenheim, but that run was going to come to an end at some point as we're past the halfway stage. And Leipzig keep winning, despite the fact they were beaten by Bayern before the winter break. I mean, it looks like they can sustain this title challenge.
Yeah, absolutely, which is good news all round, I think, because it doesn't look like Dortmund are going to challenge Bayern this season.
I mean, very disappointing the way the season's turned out. They went to Mainz, which is, there was no Boyan in that deal happening after the game. But what was interesting was that Thomas Tuchel used to be head coach of Mainz. He had Andre Schürrle there during his time there as well. Schürrle made the opener for Marco Reus, and Danny Latzer scored a header to equalise the Mainz and get a 1-1 draw. Dortmund, there was no Isak, by the way, Alexander Isak, the young Swedish striker that they've signed. He wasn't involved.
How many young forwards can they? I mean, we've touched on this before, and they're such a vibrant side. But you know, you talk about a squad game, I know, but these young guys, they're not going to be able to get much game time, are they? Because there's about four or five of them.
Well, this is the issue, because you go there. Part of the reason I think that they managed to nick him from Real Madrid was that you go, well, look at the youngsters we're giving game time in terms of Pulisic, and you've got Emre Moore, and you have Ousmane Dembele, and even Julian Weigl, who's still only 21. There's other youngsters there, including Paslak, who's going to be an excellent fullback. But they can't all. I mean, they're different positions, but they've got so many forwards now, including Schürrle and Goetze, in essence.
Yeah. I mean, you want to, if they're fit, Aubameyang and Royce start.
Oh, no question. So I think it's Aubameyang, Royce, Dembele.
Yeah, and then so you've got a lot of these guys who are going to be fighting for. I mean, you know, if you're a young player, you have to take your opportunity. But I just wonder whether at some stage that idea we're going to Dortmund to get a chance to play, if they have so many talented players, might you be like, am I going to get game time then?
Well, what was interesting, they did let, because I mentioned it earlier, they let Adrian Ramos go out on loan. And he was the only backup centre forward they've had. They have used Schürrle there as an emergency. I think that was a message to Alexander Isak. Look, you're going to be the second choice centre forward now. So another disappointing result for Dortmund. But I wouldn't put the lack of competitiveness between the bottom two on Dortmund. I'd actually put it more on teams like Leverkusen, who should have kicked on this year, and Gladbach, who had that awful start to the season, really, under Andre Schubert.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. So Bayern, there is a title race, which is good. Bayern beat Werder Bremen away. Max Kruse scored, which I saw him earlier this month in a training
camp.
Playing for back at Bremen. He looked a shadow of the player that we know he can be. Robin and Alaba with the goals before half-time, before Kruse got one back. But what is your assessment of the strength of the Bundesliga? Because yes, it's great that Hoffenheim and Leipzig and Hertha, although they're falling away, have had these seasons, but is it as strong as in recent years?
I think this is a transition year for a lot of those clubs below Bayern, and I know in essence in a way it is for Bayern too. They've got a new head coach, but it's essentially the same team. This is why I'm disappointed with Leverkusen, because they should have kicked on. There's no excuses here. It's the same head coach. They didn't really lose any of their star players, like Wendell maybe could have gone somewhere. Chicharito, they've managed to keep hold of. They're the big disappointment for me personally. Dortmund, you lose your three of your best players, your most senior players. They haven't got the backbone of previous campaigns, I don't think. Schalke, change their manager, change their sporting director. Okay, a lot's going to happen there. Gladbach are a disappointment. I think it's just very underwhelming performances from squads that are very strong. And I think next season will be a more interesting time. I mean, Leipzig, no one expected this. No one expected them to still be within 3 points of Bayern at the top of the table. But I think it's those sides underwhelming that's been the issue this season, even though they do clearly have quality in their squads.
We have to mention Köln, because they won 6-1 away at Darmstadt, which is to score six, whoever you are, away from home against even opposition of Darmstadt's quality.
I think it's their biggest Bundesliga win since 1990 or something like that.
I bet. I also had a look at the... I follow an account, Football Away Days, on Twitter, and it is thoroughly enjoyable. Basically, get a picture of every single away. And sometimes they go abroad. There was one of the Parma fans on the way to Venice on a boat, which looked absolutely outstanding.
Day,
yeah. Never mind train beers, boat beers.
Boat beers are even better than train beers.
But also in the second Bundesliga, Dynamo Dresden, who take a ridiculous amount of fans everywhere, 10,000 went to Nuremberg. They won. They're 2 points off the promotion places. And Union Berlin are also in the promotion picture. So, having had no East German sides and having everybody hating Leipzig despite their East German, we might have a proper East German side, if you like, in terms of who's been bankrolled.
Yeah, and if we think back to the start of the season, Dynamo Dresden and Leipzig played each other in the cup.
Yeah.
And they threw that bull's head.
Yeah.
One of the most disgusting things I've seen in a long time on the pitch. The Dynamo Dresden fans, such was their hatred of Red Bull and what Leipzig have done this season. Can I mention something else very quickly? Because I'm going to something called the Hessen Derby, which is Frankfurt-Darmstadt next Sunday.
Oh, that kicked off last season, didn't it?
It did, yeah, at Darmstadt. That's where it really booted off.
Right.
And I'm going to that game at the Commerzbank Arena, so that'd be great. So
don't get involved.
But you know me, Chris. I'll get swinging.
Well, actually, funny, because you've got like a Peaky Blinders jacket, so you're going to wear that.
I've got a baby face. So lucky to kick off. But Frankfurt won 1-0 at Schalke at the weekend, third in the table.
Yeah.
And chasing Champions League football now under Niko Kovac, which is an extraordinary achievement, almost relegated last year.
Let me guess, Alex Meyer scored, did he?
He did. Yes. Yes, a lovely finish as well. And another just Schalke. We thought they'd turn the corner, but you look at them still, you know, 11th in the table. Very disappointing indeed. I think that's all we've got to talk about Bundesliga this week, Chris. I wanted to ask you about Portugal.
Yes, Portugal.
Cup action, yeah?
Well, actually, I've got another Ruben, and because you didn't come up with a Ruben, I came up with two.
Great.
So would you like this? It was the Taça da Liga final on Sunday. How about this? The first time in 17 years that none of the big three, Sporting, Porto and or Benfica, were present.
Oh, wow.
43 domestic finals in a row. One of those three, at least, has played in it. And it wasn't. It was Moreirense against Braga. And Moreirense won. 1-0.
What an achievement.
First ever trophy. It was actually pretty unsavoury in Lisbon. They scored the penalty just before half-time. It was in front of the Braga end. And a lot of firecrackers were thrown from the Braga fans. And two players went down injured. Which is...
Crikey.
Yeah, not nice. But for the club, a historic evening. And yeah, as I said, nice that Sporting Porto and or Benfica weren't involved.
Congratulations to them. Chris, do you want to read out some of the Serie A scorelines from the weekend, the notable results, before I get into another managerial change at Palermo?
Another. How long have we got? Inter. Pioli's renaissance continues. I think he's won 8 of 10 games now. They beat Pescara. Great weekend for Juventus, though. Sassuolo beaten 2-0 away, Higuain and Candira. And it got better because Roma lost at Samp and Napoli were held by Palermo. I say held. And needed another Dries Mertens goal to salvage a point. And he can't stop scoring at the moment, Dries Mertens. But a great weekend for Juve. And I don't know if you saw the picture doing the rounds of the Sampdoria president after their 3-2 win. I'm all for passion, but some of his gestures towards the... Imagine sitting in the director's box and being like, who is that mentalist? And someone going, that's the owner.
Yes, that footage, we'll tweet that out because it's really good. But what a result for Palermo, Chris. Getting a 1-1 draw at Napoli, because Palermo have had this torrid season.
Yeah, again.
They've made their 11th coaching change in 2 seasons, hiring the Uruguayan Diego Lopez. And if you actually put Palermo manager in, as I did earlier, into Google just to find the story, Google isn't even up to date. They're on the last. They're on the last manager.
Is this a guy? Because often you look at him and it will be his third time in the last 2 years. Or is he new?
No. Yeah, because some of the guys are still on the payroll, so they just bring them back.
Right,
it's a lot cheaper. But they have, for some reason, given the Uruguayan Diego Lopez a 2-year deal.
His agent must have definitely don't buy rent.
Exactly. Yeah. So the former coach of Cagliari and Bologna replaces Eugenio Carini, who actually came forward and resigned in the week. Such was the team's dismal form. Check this out. So the president, Maurizio Sampierini, has overseen 60 coaching changes in 30 years as club owner. So you're averaging 2 a year. That's pretty prolific still, isn't it?
That must be stress. I mean, that must be
stressful. Last season, 8 changes alone.
It makes Massimo Cellini look brilliant.
Like a steady Eddie.
We're all right. Don't worry, guys.
I've got this. But yeah, truly extraordinary. I mean, Palermo looking like they're going to get relegated this season. I mean, if you're a fan, Chris, you can't even imagine, can you?
No, you can't even. I mean, it's a very passionate part of the world, isn't it? It's almost, there's no point in calling them a manager or a head coach, is it? They are just a guy who happens to be in charge of training
there at the time. But he did manage to get him to a point at Napoli. Palermo almost certainly relegated, though. 10 points adrift of safety after 22 league games so far.
So what happens to the, you know, if they go down, which they probably will, does he get the boot or does he...
Of course, he's getting the boot in about a month, isn't he? There's no way. Unless that Napoli result somehow gives him enough time. But yeah,
3 more days.
Staggering. Okay, Chris, I think we're done and dusted.
I think so. We've almost certainly missed some enormous story. Do tweet us if we have.
Yeah.
At FIE Podcast.
Yeah, certainly. Pete Farries, by the way, was one of those to tweet and say those Fiorentina and Roma games were class. What was that? So between those two games, 11 goals? Is that right? Have I worded that out?
6 + 5 = 11.
Yes.
That was good. You weren't even looking at
maths,
your notes.
Maths. Okay. Tweet us at FOU Podcast. Please leave us a review on iTunes if you have the time. Chris, see you next week.
See you next week.
You're listening to Football in Europe, the weekly podcast covering the game across the continent.